Welcome back to the Electrify podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo, North America's largest EV festival coming to a major city near you. All right. Well, we are live. That's right. And joining me once again is Matt. Just has such an eagerness for this education and Chargeway and all things EV. So I love having him on because he comes from more of an educated EV background than myself, but I come from the kind of, all right, what is EV? Scratching your head, kind of, you know, just chicken or
it's
the
an
egg.
Acronym, Jared. I mean, like,
yeah, I know it's an, okay, now you're just getting too literal. But joining us here is Jim Herless. His backdrop looks good, and he's going to educate us on something that I think it always comes down to: charging stations. What does that infrastructure look like? But this is interesting because CBRE, right? So the company and real estate, how does that play a role into it? And Jim, thanks for joining us first and foremost, but eager to find out how that does play a role in the whole, you know, Electrify world.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to have this opportunity to talk through this. You know, real estate is where it all begins. You have nowhere that you can put a charger without the real estate, and you have to have the right type of real estate and know how to go out to source those right locations so that it's profitable for the charge point operators.
Matt, this is something near and dear to your heart about education, information, infrastructure, because that, you know, whenever I have you on, you bring in these amazing talents and expertise, but it's scary. It's frightening. It's a whole new world, right? You know, I always go back to Cro-Magnon Man as an SNL skit, but
oh, yeah.
You know, sorry, just digging deep here. It is something that is frightening to people because it's rhetoric at times where, again, it's about shifting gears and changing that mindset from, you know, yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I think what Jim pointed out also I think is just key, that, you know, real estate, like and the play, what's happening, the state of play right now in the charging world is very much so around real estate. It is, where can you put a charger that has, number one, the best impact for drivers, but also number two, the best impact for business. And it, that's, to me, is something that is, you know, it's been unfolding for a long time. I mean, the charge point operators and the networks that have been around for years, they've dug in. They got a good sense for this. There's even companies right now that are making, you know, software programs around running AI to say, where should you put the next charger? You know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, you then look at the opportunity as it relates to things like multi-unit dwellings, workplace, anything that's related to retail. Each of these all comes down, in my opinion, to just the like high level conversation on charging is dwell time. Is what is the opportunity for dwell time at a given location? And then how do you then design a charging experience around what that regular, you know, regular dwell time might be for a user in that moment? And I think that's where, from the real estate discussion, there's a lot of expertise around, we know where vehicles come and go at these locations and how long they might sit as it relates to retail, business, or home. And that's where it's going to be very, just valuable knowledge that I think, you know, again, someone like Jim can speak to eloquently, I'm assuming, to say, okay, what can we then provide to folks to say, in our world, this is how we know we develop out. This is how we know we look for people's driving habits and how they need to park and stay. And so if you want to put in a charger, do not waste your time with a level two at this location, because the dwell time is not enough to make a value proposition to a driver. So if we need to do a higher powered charger for fast charging, levels 3 through 7 in Chargeway, what are we putting there based on what is a cost-effective option? And also what will work to, maybe of the dwell time that does exist, create a business opportunity for whoever's installing it. And so I think, I mean, again, Jim, I'm just kind of riffing on what I might look at from how you could discuss
it's
it.
Not but- a riff. There's a whole diatribe. I love this. Again, Jim, go ahead. You just go have a sandwich real quick. Matt's just going to elaborate and do your job for you.
My soapbox isn't visible in this little cube, right? Yeah. So, but these are things I would love to hear, Jim, from your perspective. I'd love to hear you unpack a lot of what I think we talk about often in the industry, but your perspective is about how you are engaging with the fueling experience with electricity through what you do. And it's a fundamental piece of the puzzle.
That you're absolutely right. And you know, one of the benefits of CBRE, it being the largest brokerage firm in the world, we have data, we have analytics, we have a treasure chest of information about site addresses, location, who's in the area. We, as CBRE, one thing that we're maybe not known for as much is the amount of investment we have in technology. And we've developed a tool in-house that we're able to truly not only give the data and analytics to validate instincts to the charge point operators to say, yes, this is a good place or a bad place, but what should we start with day one? And how should we also future-proof this site to be able to expand those charging infrastructure into the future as EV adoption continues to rise? You know, a lot of how we start to source and identify sites, obviously some of the big things that we look at are going to be based on charge point operator requirements. Do they like hospitality? Do they like healthcare? Do they like multifamily? Do they want destination or on the go? And that allows us the opportunity to really hone in and offer that expertise and really find those locations very quickly. CBRE, we manage a database of over 30,000 sites within the United States that have come to us already and asked us, can you help us electrify? What should the ownership model look like? Should I own and operate my own network? Should I bring in a third party operator, a charge point operator that we want to partner with? So we have this capability that we're going out and really trying to revolutionize, not really, we're pivoting as an organization by building this business unit within a traditional real estate organization to provide this expertise and build a network and then operate and maintain, install that network, operate and maintain this network into the future to ensure uptime, help drive EV adoption, eliminate range anxiety. That's my motto. That's my mission, if you will.
And what's crazy about this, you say pivot, and that just, I'm going to just throw it out there, is that here's petrol companies that are pivoting as well, right? Because here's the laws and the things and the funding, the government funding that is going towards this activation. So talk about pivoting. You as a real estate company, you know, you again, time and land, right? Like you can't buy time. You know, I love Sandy's thing the other day, Matt, and what a great wealth of knowledge. But here's, you know, I just know I fly a lot. I look over, I'm like, why are people fighting over land? You know, but the infrastructure, you know, is important. So talk about pivoting. Here's companies that are buying in that are petrol companies that are pivoting. I mean, you're in Texas. Let's be honest. Buc-ee's, right? Like, is Buc-ee's investing? I mean, let's put in charge stations at Buc-ee's, because talk about an experience. People are emphatic about it, like In-N-Out or Del Taco and Barstow or Alien Jerky on your way to Zizek's Road to Las Vegas. Anyways, go.
Dude, that was an obscure one right there at the end. But yeah, that's an awesome
one. And you knew exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You absolutely tug at my heartstrings when you bring up Buc-ee's, because my wife and kids, you know, when we go on road trips, we plan trips to stop at Buc-ee's because the amenities at those locations draw us to that destination. And so that whether we're charging a vehicle, you know, your dwell time at a Buc-ee's is going to be close to 47 minutes. That is a
but who's counting? 47. That sounds very, precise.
Again, it's all about data. So, you know, you have a dwell time that fits perfectly to charge a vehicle. Buc-ee's themselves are not investing in the EV infrastructure. They're partnering. And so you can go and see many of the Buc-ee's. They have both Tesla, but they also have opened up to other non-NACS charging opportunity, NACS charging standards, so that there's other charging opportunities for people that don't have a NACS charging vehicle. So, you know, that's a great example that you brought up with Buc-ee's. And, you know, you also brought up another one that sounds like it would be a great opportunity, but may not be a great opportunity, like an In-N-Out Burger. The traffic patterns, the number of parking stalls within a location in that parking lot may not fit. So what do we like to do when we're actually helping clients that may target that? You look for the co-location, right? A property adjacent that you can walk to safely to an In-N-Out or other amenities within that market. So you're absolutely right. We are tracking a lot of those amenities that are going to draw drivers to that location from a passenger vehicle perspective. It's absolutely going to be focused on the number of stalls. And then the two most important things are going to be incentive and grants, access to those to help minimize the cost of your capital. And lastly, is going to be the fight for power. This is a big race for power right now. And if I'm putting in 350 or larger DC chargers, I need a lot of power at those locations to charge these vehicles.
Well, that's, you know, you bring up a really good point too, is even if you look at, you know, what is inside the, you know, the NEVI funds and how NEVI has been written out, is they're not saying it has to go all the way to that level of power for most of the chargers, right? And I think to your point about Buc-ee's is a great example. This is part of the thing that people just don't know what they don't know. Right. Most people think of the fueling experience with gasoline. They say, well, that takes 5 to 10 minutes and that's all I care about. But you just described it at Buc-ee's. Now your dwell time is actually 47 minutes and we have that data, you know? So because of that, it then turns into, do you need to have the vehicle that pulls up to the most bonkers, highest powered charger? Or could you have something that is associated to what you know that driver is going to do at that location? And this is the complication around, on one hand, you've got business resolving that from what deployment needs to look like. And to your point, it's not just about siting the location. It's about, is it the right location? And then also, what is the utility you're working with to ensure you can get that done? What does permitting look like in that state? How much red tape are you carving through with a machete to try to make this happen? And then everybody that's a human on the end of that is just buying an EV goes, did you guys get this resolved yet? Like, can we plug in or something? Yeah. The amount of craziness that goes into getting some of this stuff deployed is quite intense.
It is. You're absolutely right. And there's some other considerations that we have to put in. When you start to look at where you're placing your charging equipment, when you do a co-location type of a scenario, can people with disabilities access those amenities? Yeah, or do they have to trench over a berm, through three bushes, across the curb, and then they're in the Starbucks parking lot to grab their coffee right. while their car is charging? And that's just not reasonable. So, there's really a whole lot that comes into this and what makes a good site and not a good site. And we talked about power. Right now, the biggest challenge is we kind of refer to it as dialing for dollars. We call the utility provider. We say, hey, at substation 22X, how much capacity do we have? How many work orders are on it? Can we get this much capacity? And hope that they come back to you in a couple weeks. We were able to develop within our technology tool now where we have about 40% of the United States and all of the substations mapped out with current capacity, as well as all of the the work orders that are in line. So that allows us to go back to our charge point, our operator and our partners and say, okay, here's how we're going to prioritize your deployment at these locations. These substations have power today that we can bring in 1.5 megawatts per acre on average. What does it look like? We're ready to go today. The other sites will deprioritize based on the work orders at those substations and start to work with the utility providers with planning out our infrastructure requirements as we go down the road.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to it, as you're calling out, zoning, utilities, a lot of players.
I'm curious, actually, as you're describing that, this is something I actually had a conversation about with a friend of mine the other day, is at the end of the day, we're talking about power and what is the production level, what is the capacity, and what can we do on behalf of drivers? And being that you're in the real estate space, is you have a very good opportunity not only to be providing locations for charging, but also how can you leverage areas of real estate and buildings and developments where you can say, you know what, we can design a system by how we can offset power needs based on power production at these buildings, whether that's stationary storage, solar, you name it. Is that something that is in your guys' pipeline for how you can respond to some of these needs yet?
Yes. Largely, when we are deploying workplace, behind the fence fleet charging, and other large fleet charging, whether you're ride hailing, last mile delivery, class 8 semis, we are definitely having to integrate microgrid strategies and technologies, way on site energy storage and generation. That is absolutely a part of it, because there isn't enough energy coming from the utility, from the substations, day one, to power the requirements for a lot of these larger implementations and fleet use.
For the fast charging deployments, or B, for, like you said, right, multiple fleets. I think that there's an opportunity to, again, this is the educational factor, is someone might think we need all of our fleets to be charging up fast. The answer is no. Again, same thing back to dwell time. These things are chilling for hours and just plug them in, let it be slow. Your utility will thank you. We can set it up faster, and I think that's, to Jared's point at the beginning, is just the educational factor around not only what the public is experiencing, but also how businesses deploy. And yeah, I think so the knowledge base you're talking about, I think, is going to be invaluable to a lot of folks that are getting into this space.
Yeah, and the capital, obviously, when you have an opportunity to install AC charging or level 2 charging, that is really important to understand. Can I get away with level 2 charging? The amount of power that's required is significantly less. The capital costs are significantly less. Maintenance is significantly less. Yeah. I don't need water cooled cables, things like that. It becomes just a much, much simpler deployment and strategy, mm-hmm. especially again on fleet. And then also for things like hospitality. I believe that we, and this isn't just me, this is a statistic that's out there, we'll have, 8 or 9x the number of AC chargers than we will DC chargers servicing all of the electric fleets as we look into the future. And whether again it's hospitality, workplace, homes, multifamily, those are going to represent a very large chunk of what of the chargers that the charge point operators are deploying. Tesla just announced the Hilton 20,000 Hilton sites. Those are all going to be AC level 2 charging. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the infrastructure is crazy. My brother is in trucking. He works for a company called TCI, and they do trucking, and they're constantly evolving, right? So when we first started this conversation, we talked about real estate and talking about all these things. I'm just going like analog, or not really, but thinking about when you're at a gas station, here's a truck pumping in fuel. And Matt, again, Jim, you're in the building, but it's such an important role of you think about moving the gas elsewhere, right? What about the infrastructure of getting that power to there and those channels and what's going on there? And like that whole, it sparks another conversation, right? Of like, we talk about the actual location, but what about the journey of getting that there? And again, Sandy had, talked about the different voltage, the wiring and this and that. What another crazy aspect that we really don't talk about much.
Well, most people don't ever think about it, right? I mean, even a standard home. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the people that have nerded out on this far too much in the last 5 to 10, 20 years about how are we going to do this, But I mean, Jim, to Jim's point, the scale to which people can leverage low power charging for the multitude of their driving needs on a regular basis is very real. But the way that I view it is it's that lifestyle component. If we take the business aspect of it out of the conversation for a moment and just look at just everyday people, if you're a homeowner, your fueling experience with electricity is extremely different from someone who's a non-homeowner who has to go find their fuel, right? So I think that to me is the high level educational piece that still needs to come down from the industry. And the worst part about that is there's like a classist element now that exists with fueling that has never existed before. We talked about this a little bit with Sandy the other day. And I think that that's something that if you think about from a real estate perspective is, all right, how can this be seen as a perk to a job or an amenity for somewhere you're staying in a way that people understand the value of it based on what they're going to be doing at that location? To your point, Jared, one thing that Sandy mentioned, and this is Jim, I think it's interesting to know, is the difference between setting up a 400 volt fast charger and an 800 volt fast charging location can be very, very complex. Now, that requires utility engagement, but then you look at what you have, at your disposal from a siting and permitting perspective. That's where we kind of play that game of, do we have to have everything be on that 800 volt architecture? Do we want to shoot for pie in the sky? Or is there a reality around building something on 400, 500 volt architecture, such as Tesla's done with their supercharging systems to date? They are moving to 1000 volt for larger battery vehicles. But frankly, for most people who have been driving EVs, especially Teslas in the last 10 years, using the architecture they do have, it works. And I don't think we have to go too far beyond that in many cases, but the type of vehicle may dictate that and other things. How are you seeing that from your perspective and in not only from site planning, but how you discuss that with opportunities of partnering?
Yeah, I think you're spot on in that regard where all the vehicles are going to continue to evolve. The batteries are going to get better. They're going to be able to take a better charge or a faster charge than the older vehicles. We're already seeing that happen where, Mercedes is rolling out their 350 kW, DC fast charging network. Not all vehicles can take that charge. So right. To your point, when we're building out the infrastructure right now, we look at it a lot like I came from data center prior to being at CBRE. And the way we would look at it is as a roadmap when we were building out a new data center, based on what is my draw day one. Today I'm using 12 kW in a data center type of a world, a 12 kW rack, and I'm going to be migrating in the next 4 years to 20 kW per rack. So I have to be able to plan for that in my future and get the property ready to support my pipeline and my roadmap for charging infrastructure, or for that data center component. And it's the same thing for that I see in how I work with my clients on a charging infrastructure component, that we want to see where you are today and then figure out how we're best suited to future proof based on the types of vehicles you're going to be targeting or partnering with if it's an OEM manufacturer, and also the, you know, minimizing the amount of ongoing capital costs and expenses, investing into the infrastructure on smartly, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think to that too is if you're having to plan that out on that way that far in advance, part of that comes down to not only just what power is coming in, but what the hardware capabilities are right now, right? That's and right. You mentioned even, okay, we've got liquid cooled cables and kind of go down the list of things that do exist, but then you have to roll in that maintenance cost over time. And on top of that, I think the way that you were describing earlier, as you mentioned, you know, looking at it now, is CBRE looking at it as your own network, or is it more that you're supporting other networks that can come in and be a part of deployments where you're working? How are you framing that in a way that I think the public can digest? Because on one hand, it might be an existing charge point operator that works with you on a program. On the other hand, it might be something you guys choose to deploy on your own and then you choose a vendor. How are you guys working on that?
CBRE will not, or we are not in the business of selling electricity. So right. We don't want to own and operate our own network of charging infrastructure. Well, where we fit into this equation and where I see it, or one of the areas that we fit into this equation, is really around our clients that occupy our office buildings that we manage are requiring EV. Charging at the office. So we're solving for our clients. We're solving for the developers and the landlords of those buildings, the people that are out there developing the new buildings and need infrastructure brought in, the landlords that are trying to make their building stand out a little bit differently than others, helping our occupier hospitality clients as they start to want to stand out and have more guests or clients come to their hotel over someone else. How can we help them become a differentiator? And then we partner with the charge point operators and bring the charge point operators into scenarios where our developers or the clients I just outlined don't want to own and operate their own infrastructure, but they do really want to have this amenity, and they would rather partner with somebody and bring it in. And I always did this analogy, and sorry to talk data center again, but back in the late 90s, and if you had .com at the end of your brand, you wanted to own and operate and build your own data center. And you realized that was a terrible idea. You know,
Pets.com did fine. What are we talking about?
You know, I hook people up on Match.com or whatever it is. I'm a dating site. You know, I'm not
Farmers a data only.
So then you go back and you look at it the same way when I'm looking at developers and landlords, is that they're also really not interested in owning and operating their own EV infrastructure. It's not their fastball. It's not their sweet spot.
Sure.
They're into owning land, renting the property, and maximizing, you know, the return on that property value.
This gets to a good point, though, is, and this has been an ongoing point in the EV space, is that who owns the fueling experience with an EV driver? And if someone wants to own it, provide rather a charging station as an amenity, that's obviously going to draw people in. If the charge point operator says we can put you on our network and show visibility to the fact that your location has this as an offering, we are already seeing now that based on the business models of some of these networks, who is owning that experience at the end when someone pulls up and says, I want to connect to this particular charger? And based on business model, we have issues. Is in one case, if the way that the revenue model for the network is based on not distributing electricity, but how they're working with the site and who bought the hardware software subscription from them, then all of a sudden you might have a ribbon cutting moment and everybody takes photos. And 6 months later, someone says, you know, that charger hasn't worked in 5.5 months because someone backed into it 5.5 months ago and no one's been watching. I think that still is a very real risk. And how do we translate that to everybody that wants to put these things in?
Analogously, it's going to Magic Mountain or whatever theme park,
and you're the food vendor, but you don't get any revenue off the roller coasters, right? So that's what you're saying is basically like, you know, hey, you're just going to supply the food, but not the actual rides, right? Well, is that kind of what you're saying?
I mean, kind of just drawing a direct comparison, it's if you go to a gas station and there's a pump that's broken, whoever's working the counter inside, you go in and tell them like, hey man, pump 5 is broken. They go, okay. They go outside, yep. They put the little yellow tape around it. They put a garbage bag over it and the handwritten signs is out of order. But they call somebody the next day and someone comes out and is, you know, someone's working on it. It's who's manning the store, right? Anytime we've seen it as EV owners, and I've been an EV owner for 10 years, anytime you see that it's a charger or a station that is on a network, but it's at a location where something's wrong with the charger, and then you have a logo from a network and you call the phone number and say, hey, there's something wrong with this charger. And they go, well, we don't own it. We sold that charger to wherever you're standing. You got to go inside and talk to them. And the person goes, so I got to go to the office in the mall and ask them what's going on with this thing. Mm-hmm. Or even if it's at a gas station, I go inside and talk to the guy behind the counter and they go, oh, man, we don't know. Like, just call the number.
Tire pump's broken, right? Right. Oh, I'll turn it on for you. You don't have to use support. All right, Jim, we're just having a conversation over here. You can go ahead and chime in at any time.
Yeah,
that's good. No, you bring up a great point. And this is part of CBRE as a real estate company. It's not only finding that real estate on the front end, but one of our other bigger areas is exactly what you're talking about. It's really getting to that operations and maintenance side. NEVI funding, as an example, requires 98% uptime. It requires a massive amount of reporting. So the charge point operators that are seeking those NEVI funds or awarding NEVI funds have a lot of responsibilities put on them to ensure those chargers are up and running. Mm-hmm. CBRE, we just invested in a NOC, network operations center, where we can help monitor the networks that we've installed on behalf of charge point operators or on behalf of developers and landlords that decide to own their own network. So we're being automatically updated, or a ticket is automatically generated if something is wrong. It'll tell us, give us a diagnosis on what's wrong with the device. We dispatch one of our 26,000 maintenance techs that we have across the United States right now. We're training a lot of them right now. We have some third-party maintenance folks and others are CBRE-trained maintenance techs. And we dispatch them immediately to go and get that resolved to ensure that our clients are able to retain as much of the NEVI funds as they can through the reporting and uptime and meeting the guidelines and requirements.
Yeah, and that's CBRE doing this? I mean, this is you're a brokerage. You guys are playing an integral role in this whole thing. I mean, I was thinking about, I don't know if you guys like McDonald's or not, but I'll spring it up. McBroken. I don't know if you know what McBroken is. You guys know? Give me a head or no. Yeah. You know what McBroken is, Matt?
No.
McBroken is a website that, Matt, again, you being a loyalist for 10 years in the EV space, McBroken is a website that you can check where the McFlurry machines are broken or not.
Oh, I have heard about this. Right. Oh, God, they have a website? So
I bring this up, and Jim's going to keel over here. Just think me bringing this up in regards to EV. But this is where our technology is, and it's also dated, right? Because, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, you've had okays, like thumbs up, you're going to go visit a spot, it's good. And I know other people have this. So I'm just playing devil's advocate here for the sake of conversation. Sure. You're ready to go. You're running low. You're in the middle of somewhere you maybe don't want to be, or you're on a road trip. Because again, you talk about the percentage of how many people are on road trips. But I know this has happened to people where they're stranded and that charger is cut or it's broken. Yeah. So the infrastructure here is similar to that of McBroken. I just want an Oreo McFlurry. And you show up and this or that, you know?
And I think this is where there's a reason why the legacy automakers have all kind of waved the white flag and said, all right, Tesla, we want to tap into what you got. I've been having those conversations with a lot of OEMs for years, is saying you need to be paying attention to what's going to happen to the ownership experience for your drivers. And I think that what Tesla's system proved is that the more you have on the physical charger that can break, then you create more opportunity for a charger to go down. And then on top of that, what they also proved out was if you can have a simple charger that is deployed in the elements and then create redundancy against that design, you can make for a lot of happier drivers. And I think that's part of what we're seeing is that if you look at brands like for hardware, ABC, ABB, FSEC, Signet, BTC Power, they all are making very good hardware, but the components that go along with that, which include a card reader and screens and buttons and things that are hanging out in the elements, they have more potential to have issues of, you know, what's going to happen when you pull up. So to your question, I think that's the Tesla model proved, if you take care of a lot of how you connect inside the car, as opposed to on the charger itself, you can basically kind of protect yourself from a lot of stuff that can go wrong. But it doesn't change the fact that, that again, that's been a closed ecosystem for so long. It's opening up, which is interesting. But then we have software issues in the background that make it so you, as a Ford driver, might not be able to use every Tesla supercharger because of software. And as a driver, how on earth are you going to know that? So there's, it, you might solve one problem and then all of a sudden you have another. And to Jim's point earlier, I think, you know, everybody going to the NACS connector or the Tesla shaped plug type, red in ChargeWave for those out there who want it Sesame Street style. It's
or McBroken. I mean, whatever app you're using, or McBroken.
Yeah, or McBroken. Red or green. Yeah, right. Yeah, is it up or down?
Like I said, I'm coming at this from an inquisitive standpoint because again, yeah. I don't have an EV, but every conversation Matt and I have, I'm like, all right, I'm going, I'm doing it. So, anyways, but go.
No, but again, the whole thing about like McBroken being an example, I mean, it's go to social media. I mean, there are owners groups and then there are groups on Facebook about specific networks where people just go to just gripe, you know, and now to the networks.
They got love company.
Yeah. But it's like, guys, are we just yelling into the dark? And to Jim, your point, it's like, no, we're going to be thinking about how we help people with that. Right. I mean, that's the point.
Well, and, you know, there is a website that I kind of call it the Yelp for EV charging stations. So we find out which ones are broken and down. And, you know, those are perfect opportunities for others to come in and offer alternative solutions to those, the existing charging equipment. We see that a lot as well, right? Yeah. So, you know, you may have a charger that's been down for 5.5 months. That's actually not an uncommon thing. People can't get out there or those charge point operators either don't have the ability to get out there and get that serviced, or maybe it just wasn't profitable enough for them to service it and they'll just leave it there.
Well, that's Jim, what the OEMs found out the hard way is that networks are operating that way.
You're at a Christmas. Yeah. Sorry. Jim, you're at a Christmas party. People say, oh, you work CBRE, you're developing these things. What would you tell somebody that is just a loyalist as far as, you know, running a petrol car? And you said, look, my buddy told me, right? Like he said, she said, telephone game. Yeah. It ends up that, you know, I just don't want to own an EV. I don't want to own an EV because I'm going to be stranded out there. What in your soul do you want to tell that kind of person, or just give them the trust fall that they can own an EV and your role in this? Because I think, you know, again, we booked you as a guest and I'm like, what? CB? Like how, why? But you're telling me this infrastructure is so profound. But what would you tell somebody that kind of plays devil's advocate to you?
Yeah, you know, I would definitely start out with the conversation around it's getting better. It is improving. We are, if you can just look at the statistics of year over year growth in the DC fast charge distribution network as it's going across the country. You can look at Tesla's numbers. I think they hit 50,000 DC chargers very recently. So that, I mean, kudos to them for deploying the infrastructure. They're far ahead of anybody else. But at the same time, the network and the states are finally starting to deploy the NEVI funds as well, right? They're finally getting out there and running those RFPs and writing out their methodology for award, how they're going to award, what they want to do in their state. So we're going to see continued adoption. We're going to see continued growth of these networks for those long haul drivers. I would say today, if you were contemplating an EV versus your combustion vehicle, I see a lot of people right now, maybe not the right answer or a solid answer, but entire families aren't all EV, right? You have a combustion engine or a combustion vehicle for your road trips. I'm living in Dallas and I want to go to Destin, Florida. Likely I'm going to load up in one of my traditional combustion engine vehicles rather than an EV, because going across Mississippi, I'm probably going to be in trouble. And Alabama from Texas. So probably aren't going to have as many charging opportunities along the way. So I that's one thing. Hybrids, plug-in hybrids, that's another introductory level into an electric vehicle. And using the EV, my friend has a plug-in hybrid Jeep Wrangler, and he hasn't filled up his gas tank in 3 months, but he's just going around town, going to the office, going to groceries, plugs it up at home. And that's really the introduction right there. And people can don't have to rely on long distance drives, or that don't have to rely on long distance drives. EV is probably not right for them today, to be quite honest. 100%, it's probably not the right move if you're driving 250, 300 miles at a time.
I would disagree, but that's okay.
That's why we're here. Let's bring in the ringer, Matt.
If you live in Kansas, would you have a different opinion than if you lived in California or something?
To your point, like visibility of like, how do I do this? Yeah, someone who lives in the Midwest or in the Plain States, they're going to say, I don't see how this works the same way as someone who might live in California or Seattle or New York. And I think that gets down to, and we've talked about this before on other conversations of podcasts, and what I talk about all the time is fuel visibility is really important. And a Buc-ee's is the size of a high school football stadium. You know, like you're going on the road, it's like, yeah, you just see it glowing. It's like, what's that? That right there, kids, is food and fill up, and you get to go to the bathroom. It's amazing. And then you go anywhere on a road trip, and if you look for something similar for EVs, I took a photo one time in California on I-5 where it had like the big blue sign of, you know, fuel, this exit. And it had Chevron and Exxon and everything else. And then at the bottom on the wooden post, it had a little EV sign. And it could have been stapled on for all I knew, but it was like this tiny thing.
Yard sale.
Yeah, right. It's like, oh, and by the way, for that one person that's looking, but there's a ton of people looking now, and there's still this fundamental lack of visibility into, I can fill up on something other than gas. Yeah. And this was an amazing study done by UC Davis in 2017 and in 2020, where they asked people in California, do you think there's enough charging, public charging out there for you to buy an EV with confidence? And a certain percentage of people said yes or no. And then 3 years later, they did the study again, same exact question. And in that 3-year time, California had doubled the amount of charging ports in the state. But when they're asking the question of people, do you think there's enough public charging out there for you to trust owning an EV? The amount of people that said no also doubled.
Yeah.
So it's not that you build it, they will come. You actually have to help people understand how to see it. And I think the Buc-ee's approach is so great for that. But to your point, someone in Kansas might go, that's fantastic. You guys are spending all this money and I read about it somewhere, but I'm not seeing anything. Help me see it.
You brought up a great point, and this is something that is near to me and dear to me. There's legislation, federal legislation in place, where the highway amenity signs, the blue signs along the highway and the corridor, they can only advertise 3 very distinct things: food, lodging, and gas.
Yes.
No EV. You cannot advertise EV
really
on those signs.
You're saying this is government?
That's federal. That. Yes, that's federal government, because interstates are obviously federal. So, and the second thing are highway rest areas as you go into new states or along the way. The reason there aren't stores there, and there might be just a vending machine, there's federal regulations prohibiting the sale of or the opening of restaurants, amenities, other than bathroom and a vending machine. Really, that's what you get at a lot of these places.
Yeah.
And those are federally regulated, which, you know, is something that I'm waiting for somebody to lobby this and get this, you know, addressed and fixed. Because that, you want to talk about driving EV adoption. If I'm driving on a road trip and I start to see more and more little green lightning bolts on those fueling blue signs, amenity signs, I'm going to get a lot more comfortable that there are a lot more of these along the way. We need more dog parks at these places.
Yeah.
dog guy. Big dog guy over here, Jim.
I think that's something that doesn't get discussed enough. There's actually currently from the FTC, there's a request for comment out that's due on December 26th that is discussing charging station labeling at stations itself. And that in turn will lead to, I'm hoping, discussion around what we can see from the federal signage as well. I mean, we have alternate fuel corridors that already exist that have been federally identified. But I think what you described is what are we putting on those signs? Is it a green lightning bolt that says there is, you know, electric fuel here? And I think that's something that would genuinely help people, again, gain that level of confidence of, okay, I know I can stop here, but we can't treat it like it's gas. we can't act like it's the identical Philip from Shell to Chevron to whomever, which all has regular. It's like, okay, what's the plug type? What's the power available? What's the network available? And what can, like you said, Jim, earlier, it's like, you can have a 350 kilowatt charger, but can the car take it?
Yeah.
You know, so what are we marketing to people so they know what they're seeing? These are conversations that we've been having, you know, from my side through Chargeway for a long time, but it's been so focused on, we just got to get the product out there. And now we have proven the technology works, but now we're getting to that place too, where how do we help people appreciate how it will fit in their life? And someone in Kansas is asking that question. I hear all this chatter, but I go out and drive around for an hour in my town. I don't see anything.
Yeah. You know, and you brought up a great point there as well. It's what we refer to in the business is view shedding. So when I pull into a parking lot, can I see your chargers? Can I see where they are? Are they around the backside of the Walmart? Or do I have to, you know, where, because you obviously, when you're deploying DC at a destination or in an existing location, you want to be as close to the service as possible, that panel where the service is coming in. So you're not trenching up entire parking lots. So it's not as cost prohibitive when you're installing something that's already $175,000 a unit anyways to install. You want to minimize any other trenching and capital, right? So what do we do? Where are we putting them? How are we displaying? Once I get into the parking lot of this retail center, how do I see or find those chargers? And that's what we refer to as view shedding. And part of our feasibility, when we are identifying a site, we'll actually walk it and recommend where we want to put the chargers based on the ability to see them, access them, safety, all of the important things.
That's huge. That's so important. And it's oftentimes mentioned too, where people will say, why on earth do these charging stations that are fast chargers not have awnings? Why do they not have overhangs? Why? And it's like, that's pure permitting, baby. It's like, what goes down with, can we get these chargers in the ground? Yeah. What if we put an awning up? Oh boy. We got to do some, all this other stuff. And then just kind of go, well, they'll be sitting in their car. It's fine. Or whatever the reasoning comes out as. But average people see that and they go, yeah, but every gas station I stop at has a 25 foot or higher awning or something. And yeah. If it's raining out, I can sit there and not get rained on. And that's a nice thing, you know,
You guys bring up so many great facets, Jim. And this is to Matt too. Who do you ideally want to listen to this episode? Like who, because again, we're kind of all on the same page. We're kind of championing this thing. We're shooting holes in the whole program. Obviously Jim is, you know, on behalf of CBRE talking about, hey, the infrastructure. Jim, who would you like to listen to this podcast? Like what person are you trying to speak to? Like, are you already the person that's already in it or the person that's on the fence of maybe everybody? Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a loaded question, but you know what I'm saying?
It's two ways, right? So first off, it absolutely is to the potential EV driver that's on the bubble, that's trying to figure this out and really does want to get into EV and just doesn't know. How to do it, what type of vehicle should they be looking at? Are all EVs the same? Do they all get 250 miles of charge? You know, and now we're not addressing that on this, but the point around the infrastructure and getting, helping that person build faith and help eliminate as much of the range anxiety as we possibly can, that EV is not going anywhere. It is going to be the future. That's just the truth of it. We will convert and it'll be wonderful. We just have to build that infrastructure a little bit faster. To me, it's not a chicken and an egg. To me, it is infrastructure first, vehicle second.
Mm. Mm. Matt, how about you, man? We've had some great conversations with some great people, and obviously Jim is one of them, just talking about, as he said, this grid and this opportunity for companies to pivot was a takeaway for me about this. You know, here's petrol companies that are saying, hey, we need to invest in this, make that experience good. Who do you want to listen to? Not only this podcast, but in general, maybe some, you know, Sandy or, you know, whomever we've had on the past.
Well, I think we've covered a lot in this conversation already.
And I love it.
Yeah. So I think, and I've had people tell me in the past that, you know, a lot of conversations that have happened on Electrify podcasts and Electrify news that have been, we get into the granularity of some of the stuff that's really behind the curtain. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of what we're talking about right now, and Jim, you've broken it down in a variety of ways that I think is really helpful, is I think that there's opportunity for a few things. Is one is I think public utility commissions need to be paying attention as it relates to how they are impacting what's happening with utilities as it relates to how utilities can support programs and deployment of infrastructure like Jim is describing. I think that we've encountered even through the network of contacts and colleagues we have where there will be programs that are ready to go and they will somehow be stifled by something from a utility commission. And it's not, my experience is not because it's willing, like they're trying to shut something down. It's almost like a business as usual response for some reason why they say that won't fly for ratepayers in your service territory because of XYZ reasons. And then something gets shot down. But then on the receiving end of that are programs like Jim is talking about, where it's like, we can't even go back to the partners we have and explain how the hell that even happened. So, because they'll be like, who put a stick in the spokes of progress on this? So I think there's that conversation that is important. I really hope that people from the joint office, Secretary Buttigieg and Secretary Granholm, they had a meeting the other day about everything and the progress that's being made. I think we need to be very practical around what we just had a conversation about for everyday people's visibility and what Jim had described for how even when they look at where do they cite a station to say, this thing cannot be hidden behind four bushes in a dumpster. Right. You invest the extra dollars so when they pull into this parking lot, boom, they see it. That is so fundamental because you can see we had a focus group years ago where some guy said, I'll be driving either my gas truck or my gas car. And if I see a yellow shell or a little orange ball with a 76 in it, 100 feet in the air, a mile away, I go, I'm safe.
Right.
He's like, but I don't, and this focus group was from 8 years ago now. He said, I don't ever see that with what you're talking about with charging. And I said,
it's such a mental shift, right? Because I mean, here we go, like I'll go down the road. I live in Riverside, California, Inland Empire, right? And there's gas stations competing against each other. I know the Ralph's or Vaughn's parking lot as that EV. There's no branding. Like you said, and it's such a brand, like, what makes you a Shell guy over a Chevron guy? What makes you a Sinclair? Like, you know, or that experience, I saw a Sinclair yesterday in Burbank, but now like there's so many topics that again, comes down to branding and marketing. And again, Matt, like you've come into this and I you come from the same background that I do, like compact sport, racing and all that. And Jim, I don't know if you're like a hot rod guy or into cars. You're living in Texas now, but you're in the land of Toyota, man. And they've done such a good job, right? Toyota and PGA and the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? But how about them Buckies, right? And it just all of it. It comes down to branding. And there's a component that I like to bring into it and being the sales pitch guy, because I love marketing, I love sales, and I don't get into the nuances of it. But like you said, Matt, pull the curtain back, show the kids what you're working with, because if you don't, and I say the kids, because Sandy, again, I reference Sandy because it's just so fresh on my mind of he'll talk to 9 year olds because guess whose planet it is next? Those 9 year olds, and that's who it is. That's who we're trying to shift gears to. But I want my 17 year old to be like, all right, I'm going to help build this infrastructure. I'm going to do this. And there are different aspects to it.
Yeah.
We've unpacked a lot, man. Jim, again, I'll be honest with you. I was not looking forward to this interview. I'm joking. I'm totally joking. I'm joking. I listen to Conan O'Brien's podcast a lot. I listened to his yesterday and I'm just dying laughing. He's like, I'm going to be there naked. And he's like, no, I'm joking. I'm lying. But anyway, podcast, you could do some wild stuff, but it was, Robert.
Jim's at the office. He's not pulling that off right now. Like people know.
No, he's not.
Robert. Yeah, he's barefoot.
BTW. Listen to Robert Schmeigel, Conan O'Brien podcast. It's incredible. Jim, you've unpacked so many different things. Again, I'm joking because I'm eager to just gain all this knowledge. I'm gonna go EV. I just don't know what vehicle. And that's the thing is. And again, I live in Southern California, so fresh in my mind, going to Las Vegas F1, I pass Barstow, I see the In-N-Out, I see the huge charging station, I see this pivot, I'm seeing it happen. And it's really beautiful because you covered, operators, who's going to do it, how, why, what's going on. Like I'm looking at all my notes here, unique requirements for fleet charging, NEVI funding, governmental stuff. And we elaborated on way more stuff than anticipated. So I appreciate it, Jim. Like I really do.
Great. Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure and always happy to answer any follow-up things that you might have as well.
Well, again, I'm joking. I was looking forward to this interview, by the way, just really making that clear. If this soundbite gets taken and edited, but Matt, go ahead.
No,
only my competitors will edit that soundbite out. And
Right. We're like, we have an opportunity. Let's break in. To Jared's point and Jim, to everything you covered, I think what this is, again, a conversation about is the level of effort that is required to make what is going to happen. And I think that the collaborations happening among various stakeholders that are required to bring this to market is really important. And I think that at the end of the day, my thought process is always, how does this serve the public? How does this serve a driver in a way that, based on who they are, where they live, and what they choose to drive, do they have transparency around what that experience will be? And I think that we are creating enough conversation now amongst players that didn't even know that they were in the conversation, where there is opportunity for them to realize how they can help play a role and how drivers have visibility into these opportunities. And then from a business perspective, we did unpack a lot of different parts of the conversation about how there are many companies out there that have never thought about the idea of being in the fueling business, but effectively that's what we're talking about. And I think that's, we're at the tip of the iceberg on this conversation. But having the expertise, the background, as you described, you guys have tons of data, and the ways that you're going about presenting that information to anybody you're working with so they can have transparency on making the better experience for the driver as well, it's huge. So hats off to you and your team for the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jared? All right. Closing question. What EV car are you most excited about, Jim?
I am most excited about the General Motors fleet of vehicles, to be quite honest, because they're all coming out with mileage over 400 per charge. So you look at the Cadillac Escalade, you look at the Humvee, you look at the Sierra, they're all over 400 miles per charge. Me being a Texan, I can also pull my barbecue pit behind my truck with that, or my side-by-side, and not have as much anxiety about what, taking a 250-mile charge per charge vehicle down to about 80 or 100, right? So I'm most excited about the various GM that are out there just based on my lifestyle. So
I like it. And Matt, do you agree or disagree with that statement?
I think that the those vehicles, as they come to market, and as they, again, as he described it, that's his lifestyle. And he's saying, that's what I want out of a truck. See, and I think the more those vehicles come to market, it's going to get more people's attention that are saying, I don't want to buy that type of car. I want the truck that I've always wanted. The challenge we have there is pure science and physics, is what is the energy density of that battery pack? And if we put a 200 kilowatt hour plus battery pack in a big truck to get that range out of it, because of the energy density we have in those packs, that's where we create 9,000 pound vehicles on the road that I'm a little bit kind of like, not a big, huge fan of that. But electrification in that way, it's okay. We've proven we can do it. But if we can improve on the battery technology, even just slightly, if we went from 4 miles a kilowatt hour up to 6, not only does that change what trucks can do, but that means anybody who's in the market for a vehicle that's not a truck, but something that is a sedan or a small CUV, those vehicles start going 500 miles.
Yeah. And that's a whole nother conversation around trucks, class eights, and the weights of those batteries and all that, the impact on infrastructure, bridges, roads, charging distances. That's a whole other episode if that's ever of interest.
Yeah. Oh, that's
absolutely. Jim, again, not looking forward to this interview at all, but you absolutely surprised me. No, I'm joking. I had no idea that CBRE played a major role in this grid, in this fabric that is EV space. So, Jim, I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I did, because your answer was correct. So Matt's wrong. GM, I'm joking. Matt, thank you as always, brother. Anything you want to add at all?
No, these conversations, I think, are a lot of fun, because it really does bring people that are listening to the podcast. We can talk about all kinds of the lifestyle part that you and I have a lot of background in. But at the end of the day, there's so many people that are behind that curtain that are helping make these conversations real. And it really can cause more people to think about, like, oh, how does this meet my need in the way that I hadn't thought about it as a business owner, property manager, you name it. So I'm looking forward to having more conversations like this with folks like Jim. And Jim, if you want to come back and have that class eight, you know, heavy duty conversation, let's do it.
So. Anytime. It's really big, and that's one of the areas that's really growing the fastest is on the fleet side.
Oh, so,
yeah.
I think again, you being are you a Texan or a Cowboy fan?
I'm a Cowboy fan.
He's in Dallas, okay, so, baby. I mean, like,
he talked about Destin again. One of my favorite restaurants in the world. Shout out. Maybe I'll get a free meal for this shout out. Town Hearth. Town Hearth is one of my favorite restaurants in the world there in Dallas. But you know what we need to do is look on the cover of Post Malone's album. He had a Ford Raptor. Why is that not a Lightning next round? You know, and you get Posty, the Cowboys come back and everything's good and we're all EV. But all joking aside,
Cowboys showed up last weekend, man. Like, the Eagles didn't know what hit them. So I think Jim's in a good spot there.
Hey, you know, my ideal thing is the Rangers won the World Series. Let's win a Super Bowl, maybe an NBA title. Let's go with the Stanley Cup. Let's do it all in Dallas.
I mean, don't get greedy.
This guy. Come on. All right. Yeah, just relax. Okay. Build the EV infrastructure first, Jim. And then we'll move on to getting the Cowboys back. And then we'll see. But yes, the Rangers. And how about those Astros? All right. Got to go real quick. Bye. See you guys later. Jim, thank you so much. All joking aside, great information, education. Real quick, do you have a resource anybody could go to, like a not, you know, what, where can people find out more information about CBRE's role in EV? Anything?
Yeah, so CBRE.com, and we have an EV infrastructure page on our website, easy to find and check it out.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Jim. Again, playing a major role here in EV world.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Electrify podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo. Be sure to catch full video episodes on YouTube at Electrify TV and follow along on social media for daily clips and more.